right.
Ready, Paul?
I don't know.
Call the order EIP committee. Can I have approval of December 4th, December 16th minutes, please?
A second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries. Eric, please.
Just one item, requesting approval to update our EPS emergency power systems contract. They were bought out by StarTech, so we did vet this with legal, and they're good with it, and there's no price change, so it's just a matter of changing the name of the company.
Second. Further discussion?
A second.
You second it. Correct. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries.
Just one update on the mental health buildings, one in Bath and one in Corning. Our staff has worked about the last 5 months, depending on scheduling down there, with an upgrade to the digs, I would say, new paint, new carpet through the whole facility, and then some flooring, subflooring issues that have been going on for quite a while. We were able to get completed. We're just buttoning that stuff up down there. So again, that has a fresh look inside, and updates. And
join
then,
the meeting.
Then the one in Bath, of course, the doors came in later than November, as I reported to you folks. Now, when they did come in, glass hardware was screwed up in some sense, like always. So we're dealing with that. But JJ's doing a good job following up and buttoning that up. So we should be done shortly with that facility as well.
Eric, did any of the work crews, you know, our work crews, do they help with that?
Yeah, we're doing all the infrastructure change, most of the electric. And then all our staff inside, we have a carpet vendor and we have day automation involved for the door and card access. We did have a group come down, a door provider that we've used in the past. I'm not sure what's going on with them now. I know they've had some change in employment, some staff, younger group, people trying to get their feet on the ground because these commercial doors can be quite involved depending on the throw, the hardware on them, especially when you start integrating card access for safety. So there's a lot of detail involved, and I think that's kind of where the mix-up's been with this process.
Any questions for Eric? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
County manager.
Yeah, a number of topics for you today. The contracts are looking like we've talked in previous meetings at the beginning of the year, just looking for authorization to... The first two would be contract extensions, and the third would be a new contract, but all of these were approved in your budget. Real quickly, Hornell Humane Society, that is for both the trap, spay, neuter program for cats that they've been doing a number of years, and the spirit program at the jail where they help work with animals and inmates and teach them responsibilities and those sort of things. So that would be for those two programs. REDEC is a historic allocation to help support their operations. They basically use this to draw down their admin cost and use more of their money for their loans and their programs, again, budgeted. And the Cuca Lake Outlet Compact, as a reminder, this is new in your budget, a one-time allocation. They requested funds for flood sensors on Coldbrook, which for those not familiar, Coldbrook feeds from the Bath area into Cuca Lake. And that will give them a better idea. The purpose of the Cuca Lake Outlet Compact, there's, for those not familiar, there is a lock in Penyan. And at some point we might want to talk about, you know, they might want to talk about that lock being upgraded, but that allows drainage into Seneca Lake to manage the water levels of Cuca Lake. But they want essentially flood detection and sensors on the head of Cuca Lake, which we currently do not have. And it does provide us some benefits too, because we'll have access through emergency services and in flooding events. When we're out at the emergency operations center, we do actively monitor all of the various sensors on the rivers and the lakes that we have to see what's happening with water levels. So that is budgeted. So looking for authorization to execute these contracts.
Second.
So does Yates County also contribute to that since the locks are in Penyan?
For this project, they do, my understanding, and I haven't specifically talked to Yates, I talked to the Cuca Lake Outlet Compact, is they do have a partnership and at times do contribute money to that. Not this specific project, because this would be located, this is just for that flood monitoring in Coldbrook.
Okay.
Which is so in our county.
This Cuca Lake Outlet Compact, it's not the association. Not the Cuca Lake Association.
That's a separate organization.
And is this like a volunteer organization?
No, this actually is something, and I learned through this process of them requesting. It's technically run by, it's managed by the town of Pulteney, my understanding. So the people who actually do, you know, the finances and those things are the town of Pulteney, but it's a separate board that was established back in the 60s with the sole purpose, and it's multi-agency, multi-jurisdictional. The sole purpose is to manage water levels in Cuca Lake.
I don't think I've ever heard of them.
Neither did I until this. Yep.
You would think it'd be part of Quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cuca Water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Motion. We had motion and a second.
You need a vote.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries.
Thank you. And then the last item that I have for you is Stream Bank Stabilization Program. I sent you an email a couple days about that. This is something that Finance Committee and many of you, I think most legislators, were at the various budget workshops. This is one where the question came up about additional allocation to soil and water for the various projects that they had. So after then, back in October, I reached out to Soil and Water and said, how many projects do you have? I sent you that email a couple days ago. So it would be the 11 private landowner projects and 6 municipal projects that are already vetted and approved to be done. But the $75,000 that you folks give in the annual budget for Stream Bank stabilization projects doesn't cover the full 75% that is paid. Property owners pay 25%, or in the case of municipalities, they're the property owners. So I guess the property owners pay 25%. Gave you that that amount. It looks like if you allocated a little over $200,000 in additional funding, those 17 projects would be able to be completed. And Soil and Water seem pretty confident that they could complete those this year. Now, and I noted it in there, but it is worth mentioning that other than the remediation, emergency remediation that Soil and Water and Public Works did after Tropical Storm Debbie, these projects were in the queue prior to Tropical Storm Debbie. So I want to make it clear that this is not, you know, Tropical Storm Debbie specifically related. Certainly any of these things help mitigate risk of flooding in future events, no matter where it occurs. So that's sort of the number process for you. You know, if you want more information, I can get you more information. If you like the number, it would have to go here, finance, full board, to offer the additional allocation.
Thoughts?
One of my priorities, I thought, for this committee would be around climate resiliency. So I think this falls under something like that, and being able to support Soil and Water in those efforts. So I'm comfortable with that number and completing these. Is there still a backlog, or is this clear the backlog and then we get into Debbie stuff?
So my understanding are these, it will clear the backlog temporarily until they, you know, authorize the new projects. But my understanding are these are the projects that have been reviewed and are in queue.
Okay.
So the total is 275,686. Mm-hmm. Is that the number?
And we have $75,000 currently in the budget for that process. And it's up to you if you want to allocate that full amount and then keep the 75 in the budget to give to Soil and Water. I don't know. I mean, 17 projects is a lot. I don't know if they're going to be able to do the 275 plus another 75 worth of projects, but however you want to handle that, you could. I see two ways to approach it. You either allocate the amount that is requested that I sent around in that email, or you allocate the difference. Just up to you. They could always, if you allocated this direct amount, I'd have to confirm with Jeff and Valinda, but My understanding is I don't see any reason why they couldn't carry that over till next year.
I'm just going to ask that. So does he have the capacity to do all of those this year?
They gave a good level of confidence that with the funding, these projects could get done. Or
providing there's not another Debbie.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
stopped everything.
Yeah, absent. Yeah,
and there's no predicting that.
Yeah, absent those things. But they seem confident because the one thing that I asked is, you know, essentially I started off with what could realistically be accomplished with additional funding in 2025.
I think we have to do it. Something we got to move forward with in the future.
Kelly.
We've talked in the past about projects that Soil and Water does not only benefit the municipalities and the landowners that are doing these projects, but realistically they benefit the entire county. And it's a good use of money. My question is, where would we pull this funding from?
I'd recommend unrestricted fund balance because it's so early in 2025. I would not recommend contingency. Mm-hmm. That would be your other option. I'd recommend unrestricted fund balance, which by resolution you could do.
Okay. Thank you.
So I go back to, I still need. So if we did the 275, 686 minus the 75 that's in our budget, or you're saying...
I think you have two options. You could do the minus the difference. You could do $201,000, or you could do the 275 and change as an allocation with the 75 already granted to them. So they would have the 75 for either additional projects in 2025 or they could carry it over into 2026. If you're looking for a recommendation, I probably would just do the flat 275 amount, and then hopefully they can do more projects with that 75, or they carry it over to 2026.
I'll make a motion to allocate 275.
275
and the number I sent you, right?
275.
Yeah. Okay.
The recommended.
There you go.
Second. All. Any further discussions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Carries.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I had.
How about priorities? James?
I got to find what I sent you. One second. You told me I wasn't going to talk.
Yeah. I changed it away.
Okay. So I sent a few, and so I'll read them out. Starting with supporting and aiding workforce development efforts. So there's been piecemeal stuff about county workforce. I think under AIP, we need to continue to work with the various agencies like CSS Workforce and any others and the local colleges and our planning department in order to help kind of try to build a workforce that can keep people here. If you review the comprehensive plan, it very much addresses why we're losing population. And one of those is that our labor force has lower participation rates. And due to part of that, they think is due to some of the training and some of the actual motivations around incentives through local businesses. So I think that's something that we should keep as a priority when looking at what we can do in 2025 to support the various agencies that are addressing that issue. Second, and I did a lot looking at the comprehensive plan because I see Marie's on. Because I think the reason why so much time and energy was spent on building that comprehensive plan was to help us kind of get on the right footing to go forward. And one of the things that is called out there is also our housing stock and quality of the housing stock is... lower than, let's say, our neighbors or the average within the state. And that is something that is problematic for attracting those that we want to keep here and also any new families and home potential homeowners. So looking at what we can do, not as a committee or maybe as a committee, but also as a board to be able to assist efforts within our local communities and also throughout the county to help improve. I know the land bank is obviously a key component of that, but if that is also something that we can potentially ramp up in 2025. That's also one thing that I thought.
If you talk to Jamie Johnson about some of this stuff, like the housing, they must look at that thing, don't they? Look at.
Yeah, they do. And we have some communication going back and forth. Nothing vetted or really at a point. I'm waiting on information to share with you all. Kelly and I have talked about it. There's a grant out there that only counties can apply for. I attended a webinar last month on that, and we'll have something for you maybe next month. I requested information from Jamie. So they do get involved, like with the Dana Lyons School renovation, not so much in Corning because, you know, but at times they get involved, but not in the comprehensive way like we're talking at this committee and the prior committee about different types of housing stock.
I'm sorry, James, I interrupted
you. That's okay. I've got four more.
Smile.
Go to it.
So next was promoting small business creation and growth. I think that's obviously something that benefits everybody in the county, certainly our municipalities that we represent. But anything that we can do as a committee to help set policy goals or promotion efforts alone to help along, people start businesses and also get them to the next phase. I know things like REDEC, Incubator Works, there's programs out there. If there are ways that we can also continue to either promote them, but also support them and any new ideas that come along. Next was improve climate resiliency and enhancing public safety during extreme events. I know that kind of pushes over into public safety and public works, but in terms of what we can do as with the planning department, there's soil and water as well. But those types of things, obviously we've seen big storms, big floods within the past few years. No reason to believe we won't get another event within the next 5-10 years. So it's something that I think we just need to keep as a priority of this committee. Next, second to last, supporting local governments in their economic development activities. I'm blessed. Irwin has its own IDA, but obviously many towns do not. And so I think the county has an opportunity to help provide some support and foundational structure to those economic development activities. Maybe it's not, we do belong to STC. We obviously have our own county IDA, but I want to engage local governments more and let them know that the county is here as a partner to help them push economic development activities. And then last was nurturing agriculture resources and rural lifestyle. I know that we've got agriculture is back in front of mind here with AIP, certainly with the county. And so I think it's something we want to keep in mind around how we can continue to promote agriculture as a key asset to the county. And also the fact that we have such proud, amazing rural towns within the county that I think we want to make sure that they are able to thrive as well. So as a county, I know it's a lot, and I've been throwing out kind of general priorities, but I think it's important just to say that this is a priority, and then how the departments that we oversee can use those to help build their goals.
So. Wow. Great.
So if everybody wants, I can share that to the whole committee. I just sent it to Mike.
Did you send it out?
Not to everybody, just to you.
Okay. Hilda.
So I apologize. I didn't send this out sooner. Mine were a little more specific, but sort of the same lines as James. One was to work with DEC, the Farm Bureau, the Sierra Club, et cetera, CCE, potential ideas to address the PFAS issues in our water and soil. We can't just drop it. We have to continue to work on it. Yes, we had that one workshop, but one workshop's not enough. We need to at least continue to meet to see if there's anything we can do to help to alleviate the issue, because it's in our water. It's everywhere. Work on comprehensive plan for the actions in 2025 and report out. I'm glad Marie's Oh, I thought you said Marie was on. Oh, MMS is Marie?
Yes.
Oh. we have actions I know that have that are needed for 2025. I didn't go through it to specifically say what they were, but I would like to see those actions started or at least continued and to report out on how they're going. We spent a lot of time on that comprehensive plan. I devoted a lot of hours to it. I don't want to see it just sit on the shelf, which was one of my first concerns with the very day we started. So I just want to continue to make sure it's out in the forefront. And another one is I want to see us finalize the responsibilities of weights and measures. You're going to hear this from me all the time for implementation of our sticker store county law. And we need to be working with law enforcement and the courts to get this thing finalized and out there so that we can take care of the issues rather than just talk about it. So those are mine.
Yeah, and I asked the KLA to Zoom that workshop we had. It opened their eyes, yeah, because I heard from them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had no idea.
Yeah.
So I agree. Paul?
Ditto.
Shannon.
I mean, that's a number of priorities. I think our biggest priority is the county itself is just to work on staffing issues, because I think, you know, we have to have the staff to facilitate these priorities, and we've got a big hurdle right there. I mean, without the staffing at the county, you know, some of these priorities, like with the comprehensive plan, things like that, those things are going to put on the back burner. So we need, I think that's goal number one, which it's not really so much to do with this committee, but I think we're going to struggle until we fulfill those goals.
Yeah.
Which I know we've addressed already.
Kelly.
I was just curious because it does seem that filling positions and vacancies is a common theme, and it should be amongst all of our committees and our department heads. I know that we use headhunters for certain positions, but are there other services or other creative ways that we can make the jobs here look more appealing or reach more people that could possibly qualify for some of these positions?
Yeah, it's a good question. So because so many of the positions are tested, you know, we've talked about marketing firms and headhunters and those things, but are, you know, the ones that require someone to come in and take a test, it's more about getting more people to take those tests so that we have more options to be able to pick from.
So we waived those fees and the programs where they aren't there some programs where the state is actually waiving the testing altogether?
Yes, and
be limited.
Yes. So yes, with a bunch of complications that just came from the state, but it's called the HELPS program. We have hired a number of individuals under that. It does permit them to work for 3 years without taking a civil service test. Talking to Nate, state civil service has thrown a curveball in that might make it a little more difficult, but we have utilized that to expedite hiring some staff. So we are certainly trying a bunch of things that we never did in the past, including a lot on digital in terms of where we share our either test announcements or job postings. So, you know, your Indeeds, your LinkedIn's, the various associations, we're trying to get a little more aggressive with that. I think the main thing, and you know, it's very early in the year, but I think the new rates that are posted with the union contract that has been now ratified and adopted, I think is going to go a long way, because people are going to look at a much larger number in terms of salary that's available. So
do we send out those test notifications to the high schools and the colleges as well?
Colleges, I believe, yes. I'd have to check on high schools. I'm not sure about that.
Perhaps we should look at where we send those notifications to and expand those and try to put heads together and try to be creative about how do we get those notices out.
Don't we have workforce development? You serve on the board, mm-hmm. right? Do they help us with any of that?
Send them to them.
Send it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Do they send us anybody?
So not
really. I'm assuming that's level.
That's not how you're right. That is not what CSS workforce development does in terms of sending recruits. They handle more of the training, but we use them for promotion of opportunities. So like on their social media and things, CSS provides training, works with employers to provide training for incoming or potential staff, but they don't do recruitment services.
The civil service 3-year extension before they have to take the exam. After the 3 years, they have to take the exam?
Well,
even though they're doing an A+ worker?
That's sort of that's the complication and sort of the open question that civil service just sent. And it's something Nate can better explain than I, but it is. Before we thought that once they hit their 3 years, no test, you go from help program provisional to full-time. They want to change their designation, or they are talking about creating a new designation if they don't take the test, which puts the employee in a weird situation in terms of because we have essentially provisional, which is probation or you haven't taken the test, and permanent. Like those are the only two. It looks like they were creating another one, which if I were the employee, I'd be like, well, where am I in limbo? Where am I? There are ways that Nate, as the civil service officer, can mitigate that. And so he's working through that, but it requires a lot of public hearings and all that. So we're trying to figure that out right now. Okay. But long story short, it went from our understanding was exactly your understanding that you serve 3 years, you become permanent, no test, you're done. And it seems like it's not as simple as that anymore.
Gotcha. Okay.
But we're not highlighting that to candidates either. We're not hiding it, but at the same time, we're basically saying, you're under the help program. The goal is for you to serve for 3 years and not have to take a test, because there are ways we have a few years. There are ways that again, Nate can change it. And he's working with his counterparts. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. There are mechanisms that he can do procedurally to do it. It's just, he's trying to make sure that state civil service is okay with doing that.
Does NYSAC have any influence on that?
NYSAC does. HELRA, which is Nate's group, like his association, his director, HR and Civil Service Directors Association, is very active and very good. I say they have more of the line, and Nate was president of PELRA and is very involved. Because of the state civil service, it's not a huge department. I think that interaction directly between PELRA and the state civil service is kind of the key link, but NYSAC is aware. Yeah.
Anything further? Other comments?
Good. Can I just make a couple of statements, I guess. The whole recruiting thing, I mean, we all understand that there is a labor shortage in the marketplace. And I think we've done a lot of stuff already to try and offset that, especially with the contracts that we've just agreed on that, you know, increased everybody's wages. Other than a DA being a part-time or full-time, I can't remember a position that we as a legislature said no to. I mean, we support anybody that they can bring to us to hire. So I don't want anyone to misunderstand that we aren't supporting departments in trying to fill vacancies. They're trying as hard as anybody. It's just there aren't people out there. They need bodies.
Yep, I totally agree.
Smart bodies, but they need bodies.
Yep. I just don't think that people want to work.
Well, and that's a big issue. And one of the things that we're doing, and we were talking with Public Works about it yesterday, is much more communication and activity, especially with BOCES and high schools and others, to try to market, especially at these higher rates now, market to students who are going to be leaving high school, and whether they go to college and look at this, hey, in 4 years I could have this opportunity.
Yeah.
or especially for the trades and COs, potential deputies, like, here's what I could make if I do this or apply for this. So
the one problem at that age is they can't place a value on benefits.
No.
Because they can't cash that, right? So the retirement, the health insurance, I mean, they're all young and healthy, and retirement is what their parents talk about.
Well, so
it's hard for them to associate, holy shit, that, or, holy crap, that's a lot of money.
So a lot of them don't want to go to college or can't afford it.
Yeah.
So that's a perfect. So the whole BOCES thing. So do we go, does the county go to career days? Because I've gone there for other things, but I don't remember the county going there.
We did. Eric, you guys went to the big one they had in Big Flats. That's the other thing.
That's
the
one the IDA does, right?
Yeah.
Like the high school has one. And Career Development Council organizes it. I don't know if we go to that, but
the
captive audience.
We do work with Career Development Councils, and any one that comes across my desk, I send to personnel and say, hey, a lot of them are virtual now too, not necessarily with high schools, but Career Development Council and DOL are doing a lot of virtual job fairs, and we're doing those as well. But yeah, we'd have to work with the individual high schools. I'd say we're much more in tune with BOCES as opposed to each individual high school.
Because I've sat in on Corning engineers come and talk about high level stuff. These kids have no clue what they're talking about. But yet, if you come in as a nerd department, come in and talk about those kinds of things, CDL licenses and all of that, these kids might be more interested, because there's a lot of kids who don't want to go and can't go to college.
Well, and there's another example of a hurdle was getting people with CDLs and that they could afford it. And we now have an internal program that will do that, you know. So I think we've been very good over the last years of trying to reduce obstructions or obstacles to get employees. It's just the headcount isn't out there.
We need to be flexible. We need to be creative. We need to try to stay ahead of the times in terms of the outreach specifically. And just my whole goal, and I'm talking to students today, you know, I highlight, and there might only be one student that is even paying attention, but, you know, highlight pay, benefits, all of those things. One, not to get off track, but one of the biggest things, and you hear a lot of communication about it and some chatter in Albany, is tier six is a real impediment. And again, if you're 18 years old, are you looking at retire, like my age of retirement? Yeah. Not necessarily, but when you can say 30 and out, if you're 30 and 55, people can wrap their heads around that.
Yeah.
Now with tier six, that's why there's more talk at the state about changing that, because the state is having a heck of a problem with recruitment too, because yes, does tier six save you some money? Sure. But now we're facing recruiting challenges because the pension isn't what it used to be.
And I think we took a big first step with the increase in salaries. I mean, we were so behind the other counties. What was 6 to 8% was the recommendation. We bring them up to be competitive with the other counties in the state. I mean, we don't compete with the private sectors. That's a different story. But to be competitive with the other counties, someone in Corning looking at Chemung County versus DeBend County, you know, somebody good, we want them. So I think that was a big first step. It doesn't solve the problem, but I think it helps the problem. No,
but that's 100%. A constant moving target.
I mean,
Livingston was doing everything to get deputies, offering $10,000 bonuses. And I mean, some of them you just can't keep up with.
Yeah. And now the good news is, my understanding, we're ahead of Chemung for most pay rates from management to union. But I agree with you, Joe, that when we put out a job announcement, everyone's eyes are going to go to, well, duties, do I qualify? But it's going to go to salary range. And now that those numbers are significantly higher, I think we have a better shot.
And I compared a lot of our, you know, when I saw those vacancies back in June, I was looking at the salary comparisons in other county, we were $4,000 or $5,000 below everybody.
Yeah. And now for some of those, especially licensed positions, we, knock on wood, based on our data, should be a couple grand above.
Yeah.
Do we put that out on social media, Eddie?
Any job announcements? Eddie's doing a great job of posting that. Yep. He just posted a bunch Monday.
Every Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Every Tuesday.
There you go.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And just to take a second to rewind here, just so how we got here. And I think we all knew this day was coming because they all talked about when the baby boomers retire, we're going to have huge problems with, you know, Social Security benefits and employment issues. But what happened is when COVID hit, like all the baby boomers went out, instead of gradually, they all went out at once. A lot of them didn't come back. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I mean, I think that's basically a lot of where the shortage came from. You know, all these baby boomers retired. We've gotten a lot of the young people. Well, I mean, there's the social media thing where people are, doing a lot more social media work as well, and not really getting into the public sector so much in terms of hands-on and industrial works. But so this shortage of workers, I think we all knew was coming. We just don't know what was coming all at once. And am I correct there? I mean, I think you're doing
part of it.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
The other boom that happened in the 50s, 60s is they started becoming dual income families. The wives normally stayed home. They were domestic, but then they got into the workforce. Mm-hmm. So that built up the workforce even higher. And now that's not happening as much. So
childcare is an issue that we keep hearing because of the extreme cost of it. So that's one area. Some counties, not a lot, but I'm aware of a couple rural counties that we've had conversations with that, bless you, who created their own childcare centers for employees.
Wow.
I mean, there are things like that, that, I mean, you're talking millions of dollars of construction and those sort of things.
But, yeah, that's according to.
But there are, those are the things that some are looking at to reduce the childcare barrier. We keep hearing that as one that is keeping either mom or dad at home from working. The disengagement, we are seeing far more people when they hit their retirement number leaving than before. We'd normally see people stay, you know, instead of 30, stay 31, 32, 33, which those couple extra years help. And we're not seeing that anymore. So it's, and the loss of population in New York doesn't change it too.
Yeah.
The work from home has changed it too.
And we are being, I mean, I think I told you all, I know I told the chairs before joking around, but I mean, my former boss, because I came from a flexible telecommuting world, before I came here, and he said that never going to happen. We are as flexible as we possibly can be with those things, especially when it relates to, you know, you have a sick kid at home, but you can still function. Like we are,
right?
We're trying to be as flexible as possible in all of those. And, but we do hear that.
But in so many of the positions, they're customer facing. They need to be here.
They
can't see clients from home.
No, it's a lot of your management. But I mean, yeah, you can't plow a road, you can't patrol a road, you can't protect the jail, you can't do those things from home.
Yeah.
So we're trying what we can. Obviously, open to any and all recommendations you have. Hilda, I can reach out to schools. I know most of the supers pretty well, and you know, try to connect directly with them instead of just through career council and BOCES. But yeah, it's I think, if I had to say, I think we're going to have maybe the best opportunities kind of in Eric's department working with BOCES. Okay. He's done a good job. He and Todd have been working where we had to work with Scott Sprague to make sure we could even do it. But to have a 16 and 17 year old get on a piece of heavy equipment, you know, from a liability standpoint, we're looking to expose these students to get them internships, but also, hey, this is kind of a cool job and maybe I want to apply. So yeah, it's
clerical side too. I mean, there's,
oh yeah,
there's a lot of, I bet, potential.
Yeah. It's the
kitchen. My other comment is around, there was a common theme between the two committees about homelessness and how do we address that? And I made the statement 5 years ago that the county will never be in the ambulance business. And here we are. But I'll make the statement now that I never would want to see us build a facility for homeless because it spikes in the winter. Right. And so that's what all the motels and hotels, they live off part of that as their revenue stream. We don't want to be in that business.
That is your call. I will say, like I did back then with ambulance, and hopefully I'm
And my last comment, and I realize it's from a different committee, but Joe made the suggestion Monday about SROs and how the county should standardize what they do. I thought about it driving home that day. And my only concern is we're the agency that employs the person, but they're paid for completely by the school district. And that's all we do, right? They work for the county. Does that change our liability if we start dictating to the school districts how they're supposed to utilize our SROs?
I think it's,
that would be my concern.
And I thought about it too. I think it's a good idea. I think what it is more of an interactive process. And just knowing, because, you know, like many of you friends, family that work at schools, I know a lot of people who are retired and SROs now. It depends, in my view, primarily on what the administration of that school wants and expects. Mm-hmm. So in my experience, a lot of times it's the principals, not the superintendents, that kind of direct or ask the SROs to do things. Also depends on the SRO and what their passion is and what they want. I've seen a number of different ones that loved working with little kids. So they were at the primary school more than they were at, you know, and so I think Tim and I kind of talked about it. We probably have a limited opportunity to specifically dictate like 10 things that an SRO will do, because a lot of it is dependent upon the school. But I think you all could set expectations of what you would like to see achieve. And then I think it's more of an interactive process working with the schools to say, you know, here's what we'd like to see.
There is a difference between elementary, middle, and high school.
Sure.
And how those SROs are interacting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also thought, I mean, Joe was a principal, so he worked with his SROs. As an administrator at a school, do you want the county dictating to you how you should be utilizing this person?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's a good thought. I didn't think what I was thinking of when I put that goal out there was, or priority, was that Sheriff works for us. He's in charge of the SROs, so he's in charge of the responsibilities that each of the SRO does. And they're all different. Mm-hmm. My concern is, you know, can we find a way? And I think that's a good point. I don't know, you know, if I'd want the county telling me what my SRO can do, but I do think there's some real safety features when I could have done anything I wanted with them, you know, and I'm not sure I was in charge and they pretty much did what I told them to do. But there's some things that really need to be done in every school. Do they do door checks periodically? Do they, you know, do we have a good system where they come in through, whether it's a card system, who's at the welcome center at the front door? Our books checked. If we see parents in the school, they're walking the halls. I mean, there's so many little things that need to be done in this day and age with people walking in with guns and stuff in schools. You know, that's something, you know, it's just got to be, we've got to be on top of that stuff. It's part of their responsibility. So, but I think Scott brought up some good points, and I never really thought of it that detail, but the way I was coming was, hey, you know, we're sheriff's under our, you know, some of the things we want to dictate, and he's in charge of the SRO. So going through him.
Well, I think the sheriff and his department and SROs, that's their livelihood, protecting people. So they understand that business. As a school administrator, you don't know everything that they do.
Yeah.
So maybe providing a suggested list of this is there what they should be doing would be helpful.
Good thought.
Because people that work at schools aren't police officers.
Yep.
It's just, I was more worried about, are we starting to assume any more liability? I've never read our contract with the SRO.
I don't know about liability, but we kind of talked that you probably have limited opportunity to specify in the contract, here's exactly what the duties will be or the functions will
be. So it's whether exactly or this is what we would suggest.
Right. And that's why I think it's more of an off contract interactive process. And I know my understanding is the sheriff, the undersheriff, and others do work with the supers to talk about those things and explore opportunities. But every school does things different. I mean,
I was lucky to have two very good SROs. Kenzie Spaulding was my first for 2 years, and then Sean Kopp, and they're both now police chiefs. But I was lucky to have two good ones. But I heard some horror stories from, you know, other principals. Hey, my SRO doesn't do anything. He sits in his office all day.
Well,
you know, who's manning the cameras? Who's watching the front door? Who's checking the doors? All that stuff. And you know, at the high schools, I said it the other day, you can get in and out of a high school with so many people coming in and out throughout the entire day, students included, parents coming in, early dismissals, open campus, all that stuff. And it's just, you got to have somebody really keeping an eye on it. And it's hard for administrators to do because you're getting yanked all over the place. But anyways,
it is my only other comment on that. And you can feel free to do so as well. I've been contacted by administrators, not often, but a few times, about concerns about productivity and, you know, responsibilities of a few SROs.
Yeah.
And my first thing, did you call the sheriff or undersheriff? They're the supervisors. They need to know that. And we have switched. My understanding is they have switched SROs in and out based on some of those things.
I think Scott's comment is probably the best approach, you know, offer some guidelines. Hey, here's my suggestions. Leave it at that.
10 years ago, I don't think anybody really was concerned about overdoses in schools. Now there are overdoses.
Yes, there are.
And so that's different than what it was when it initially started.
Yep.
How do they handle it? Who do they call?
Well, yeah, and you, Joe, too. I know that these SROs, they establish relationships with these kids. Yeah. And the information flow back from the kids to the SROs, what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
Is there drugs coming in? Are the kids that are stealing and things like and that? Yeah, it's amazing.
What do they go into? What do they speak on? I mean, you can really make good use of them.
They're like part-time social workers also.
I mean, they can be busy from the time they walk in to the time they leave.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just criminal stuff, you know, or breaking up fights or stuff like that, or thefts, or, you know, they can be pretty constructive.
Yeah.
So
anything further? Great discussion, folks.
Sorry to drag it out.
Oh no, great.
I'm glad you brought it up.
Points.
10:30.
That's why we're here, Scott. That's why we're here.
I just got one thing, and if I can offer this, and I really don't know if it falls under the AIP committee or if it falls under public safety, but I really think, I had briefly put down and talked to Carol about what are my goals or what I thought was a priority, should really be the increased use of broadband in the county. I've had a couple of discussions with Jack, and I know there was a grant that was available, and I talked to him last month. He's all over it. We're applying for some money there, but being a rural county, you know, we've got so many people out there outside of Bath, outside of Hornell, outside of Corning that don't have internet. And it's crazy because it's not just a convenience, it's a quality of life thing. Anymore, the past 5, 6, 7 years, everything can be done online. You can do counseling, you can do banking, you can do shopping, you can do doctor's
appointments. Yeah. Okay.
So
we talked about
we just dumped a ton of money in
there. Yeah. Yeah.
Before you got here.
Say what?
We've been batting this around.
Yeah.
Okay. We're also spending close to $10 million.
Yeah. And if we get this additional grant, the estimate is that we'll be down to 1,400 addresses unserved. And we are getting closer to the ones that are 2-3 miles between houses.
Where so we're making good progress.
Not in that 1,400 list.
No. I could confirm you're not.
Nah, it's
Carol.
It's in the works. Yeah.
This is off subject a little bit, but can we get a report on the cannabis tour
I've been chatting with Langdon. I chatted with Hilda. Langdon and I have been going back and forth. I think if next month, if you would like, Langdon could come to this committee and report his lessons learned in that training OCM raid. And there are some barriers and some nuances that OCM, you know, when they introduced this ability to you all to adopt this, they didn't talk about all the complications that come with it, and how intricate it is when you have law enforcement and civil inspection going on at the same time. I have to catch up with Tim, but we've talked with the former county attorneys about trying to do both in conjunctions with the use of a search warrant for law enforcement and the civil inspection. But it's it's complex, but that would be my thought, is have Langdon, if you'd like to come to AIP next month and kind of give you a, here's what he learned. And we're going back and forth on a bunch of checklist things to keep it moving.
So no violations were reported.
What's that?
No violations.
Oh no, they locked the store.
And they arrested.
So yes, they locked the store, and our understanding, and Hilda confirmed it the other day, is very shortly after the store was back open. Langdon did notify OCM, because this is, as I said in my emails to you, this is OCM's inspection. It's not our inspection. So for all the court that could happen, that the state attorney general would have to do that. It was his use for training, and also for the law enforcement, our law enforcement officers that were there helping out. But so Langdon did report that they were back open, which should trigger violations. So Langdon sent pictures and those kind of things to OCM. Hopefully they do something, but it is imperfect, like everything has been with OCM to begin with.
Thank you.
They were back open for Sparkle and the Festival of Lights, Parade of Lights. So they were open during all our community activities.
And regarding PFAS, if you go on Cabela's.com and try to order Gore-Tex clothing, you cannot ship it into New York now.
Why would I want to order Gore-Tex clothing?
Well, you wouldn't, but a normal person that goes outside would.
Yeah,
I didn't say that.
You would want to open that door, Hilda.
So just like fireworks, you're going to Pennsylvania to buy.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything further, folks? Great discussion. Motion to adjourn.
Oh,
all in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Okay.